Whole Hog Sports presents the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, the premier Arkansas hoops podcast, brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. With Whole Hog Sports basketball analyst Scotty Bordelon, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Another big week for Razorback basketball, which hosts Tennessee on Saturday in a rare top 25 matchup at Bud Walton Arena. Razorbacks are 23rd in the AP poll this week, and Tennessee is ranked number 16. Arkansas is coming off a 1-1 week that included a 1-point loss at Alabama and a 19-point win on the road at Missouri. The Alabama game turned into what we thought it might, a little bit of a trap game a few days after that big win over Auburn. Arkansas fell behind by 13, but came back and took the lead late and had a chance to win at the end of the game. Razorbacks bounced back a few days later with a great performance at Missouri and swept the series against the Tigers. Matt Jones with Bob Holt of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, Scotty Bordelon, and Andrew Joseph of WholeHogSports.com. And Scotty, now Arkansas has won 10 of 11, and I have to believe that Eric Musselman likes where his team is. You know, with a win over Tennessee this weekend and a Kentucky loss, Arkansas could be in a tie for second place in the SEC.
Yeah, one of the things that really stood out to me after, you know, Arkansas went to Missouri and won pretty handily, like that game was not in question. After about, you know, 6 or 7 minutes in, Arkansas went on a 15-0 run to grab control. I think they led by at least 8 points the rest of the way. I thought it was like another case of Arkansas just kind of doing what good teams do. They just handle poor teams on the road and beat them like they should be beaten. And they stuck to the script. And what Eric Musselman said the other night that stood out to me was that he really likes where his team's mental makeup is right now. And it just got me thinking about when me and Bob drove down to North Little Rock, and Arkansas just got sliced apart by Bebe, Ayola, and Hofstra. And I remember asking Eric after that game, I was just like, what are, can you pinpoint some things that need to change for your team to start playing at the level that you want them to? And he rattled off like 6 things in the next 3 seconds. And you just didn't know. The team didn't really have a shape. It didn't have an identity. And just the mental makeup of this team, I think, is what's impressing me the most. Like they've won, I think, 4 of their last 5 on the road. And not too awful long ago, you know, Arkansas was a team that if they won a game or 2 games on the road in the SEC, it was kind of like a small accomplishment. But they're handling their business, and they very much look like the part of a top 25 team. And they've really set themselves up for, you know, a real showcase game on Saturday at home in front of what, you know, could be a crowd that maybe rivals the Auburn atmosphere last week.
Speaking of top 25, Bob, you've got a vote. Where do you have the Razorbacks right now?
I think I put them at 21, I believe. I thought that was fair. I mean, they obviously had a huge win over Auburn, lost at Alabama, no shame in that. I actually put Auburn in my poll, too. I think maybe right behind Arkansas. I know people might say, well, Alabama beat Arkansas. How do you rank Arkansas ahead of Alabama? But it was a road game. It was a 1-point loss. I'm pretty sure if that game had played in Fayetteville, Arkansas would have won. Neutral floor, we'll see. And Alabama is such a schizophrenic team, but they have some huge wins there. You know, Baylor, they beat Houston there. They won at Gonzaga. So I thought, you know, I didn't see any reason to drop Arkansas. I had Arkansas 23 the week before, so I didn't see any reason to drop Arkansas out of the poll after the week they had. And I thought they deserved to move a couple spots up. And if they beat Tennessee, got to move them way up.
Andrew, what have been your impressions of the Razorbacks here in the last week?
I think the biggest thing that I've seen from them is that they've learned they can play without depending on JD Notae to be a do-it-all guy, which, I mean, he is their go-to scorer and a lockdown defender on the defensive end. But as you saw in the Alabama game, he got in quick foul trouble, and he only played, I think, a little over 20 minutes total. And, I mean, they were right in that game till the very end without him. And I think being able to be more of a complete team with Stanley Amude and Trey Wade kind of stepping up and filling roles is kind of, they're more well-rounded than they were maybe in that rough stretch they had late December, early January.
We'll go to the Missouri grad here. Bob, the Razorbacks have beaten Missouri twice this year by 63 points. And based on our research, that's the most they've ever beaten an SEC team by, you know, cumulatively in the same season. Now, In 1945, they beat Baylor by 66-60. I don't think you'll ever see them beat the same team by 126 points in two matchups again. What were your thoughts, number one, of watching that Missouri game the other night, kind of through the prism of what we saw Arkansas do to them earlier this year when they beat them by 44 in Fayetteville? And what do you think of the Missouri right now and the, you know, the state that that program's in? Because it seems like Arkansas really beat up there or went up there and beat up on a program that's – is disarray the right word for Mizzou?
I don't know if disarray, maybe just – I don't know. They're just in a ditch right now. It's funny. They've had some good wins this year, you know, and they've had some I don't know if you want to call them good losses, but what impressed me most about Arkansas going in there and winning like they did was that, you know, Missouri had beaten Alabama there. They just were coming off, you know, pretty solid win over Ole Miss where they were up by 20 and kind of, you know, lost a lot of the lead but held on and won. You know, they lost – I think Auburn's first game as the number one team was at Missouri, and that Auburn struggled to win by one. That game was in the 50s. Missouri held that potent Auburn team to 55 points. And then Florida, who's a pretty good program, I think – they had Castleton back, I think, when they played Missouri. And Missouri should have won that game, honestly. They played like at 2 in the afternoon on a weekday because of snow. I don't know if the crowd was a whole lot bigger than what they were was for the Arkansas-Alabama game, honestly, or the Arkansas-Missouri game. But, you know, the only team that really gone in there and handled Missouri easily was Kentucky, and by margin of victory. They'd beaten them, I think, 83-59 or something like that, 20-something points. And Arkansas went in there and just jumped on them. Not quite as bad as they did in Fayetteville. I think Arkansas was up 26-3 in that game. This time they were up 19-4. And they ended up having a 19-point lead halftime, won by 19. So, you know, I'm sure Missouri, some crazy Missouri fans might say, well, hey, we tied them in the second half. Well, big whoop, because, you know, Arkansas was kind of coasting and Missouri got it back within 11. But, yeah, I know some of those tickets, they had a promotion for $1 tickets. I mean, not for all the tickets, but for some of them. And that didn't seem to draw a lot of people in. And just the way they just were beaten so fast. I mean, down 19-4 at home, you just don't see that in the SEC or really any major conference. Just doesn't happen. And, you know, Konzo Martin's known for being a real tough-minded defensive guy. That's kind of player he was. You know, he played for Gene Cady and coached with Gene Cady. You know, we know the former Razorback assistant for Eddie Sutton. Gene Cady's a tough-minded guy. So to see a Konzo Martin team just kind of lay down like that. I mean, after the game, Konzo Martin and Javon Pickett both basically said they let Missouri – or they let Arkansas do whatever they wanted to do offensively. I don't know if you can – have a bigger indictment of your team than you let the other team do whatever they want to, you know, dribble where they want to, pass where they want to, score how they want to. It was a really bad game for Missouri on a lot of different levels, you know, bad crowd, bad performance, just bad everything.
Yeah. One of the things that jumped out the other night was, you know, Stanley Amude just playing incredible for Arkansas on the road. And that's what you need, you know, Eric Musselman always says how hard it is to win on the road in the SEC. His team's made it look pretty easy, but it's still pretty tough. You got to go in there and defend, and you feel like you're probably not going to get the benefit of some whistles, and you still got to make some shots. And, you know, you're probably not going to get the benefit of a lot of whistles on the offensive end. Like when you attack the glass, we saw that, you know, on some of the shot attempts that Audis Toney had at the rim against Alabama. Like, he got hammered on a couple of shots around the rim, didn't get the whistle, and that kind of threw him out of the game a little bit. But Stanley's just playing so well, and you need guys outside of your top two stars to, you know, give you really, really good contributions. And there's nobody on the team that's given Arkansas a better play, especially away from home, than Stanley. Lately, the last three SEC road games, you know, Arkansas is shooting close to 50% when he's from three, when he's on the floor, and he's 15 of 24 from deep himself. Like, his splits from three and home and road are just, they're kind of mind-boggling a little bit, because he's well over 50% on the road this season, and he's around 31 or 32% at home. Arkansas, you know, needs a little bit more of that road production at home, especially with some big games coming up in Bud Walton Arena. But Stanley's just, he's looking more like the player I thought he was going to be a little bit earlier. But Eric Musselman said, I think it was on Wednesday, we talked to him again, a quick turnaround when they got back to Fayetteville on Wednesday. And he said, you know, Stanley's play is just kind of like there's magic in the work. And he said, slowly but surely, Stanley's just, you know, he's putting more time in the gym away from the coaching staff. And maybe when he's got the gym all to himself, he's getting reps up. And practice, you know, makes perfect. And, you know, he's basically a human fireball from three on the left side of the floor. And that's really good to see for a team that's largely struggled from three this year.
You know, the other player who I've been so impressed with, and more so than just the last week, has been Jalen Williams. And I had this thought the other day. I'd be interested to know what you guys think about this. Number one, he wears number 10. And there have been a lot of really great Razorbacks wear number 10. The Brewers, Todd Day, Daniel Gafford, Bobby Portis. But more to the more recent number 10s, it kind of reminds me of that sophomore breakout season that we saw from Gafford and Portis. Now, Gafford and Portis were much bigger recruits, I think, than Jalen Williams was. Portis was a five-star recruit. Gafford, you know, was really highly recruited as well. I don't think Jalen was as highly recruited, although teams were interested in him. But it's interesting to me, Scotty, just how well Williams has played here as a sophomore. And do you see that correlation between what you saw from Portis and Gafford? They're certainly different roles that all three of them played. I don't know. Just kind of a thought that I had about Williams, and I think he's really flourished here as a sophomore. It'll be interesting to see if he has any kind of draft potential like they had.
Yeah, I think he definitely does have some draft potential, and I think his name is starting to get included in some of those top 100 big boards from guys like Sam Vecenie at The Athletic and maybe some of the other draft analysts. But I think you made a good point. Like with Gafford and Bobby Portis, both of those guys made really, really good leaps their second year. And I think that's what you see a lot of really good players do. Like Jalen took that experience that he gained from, you know, being – you know, a really nice complimentary piece to Justin Smith last year, probably soaked up a lot of knowledge from him. And it also helps when you're 6'10 and you're mobile and you can do just a little bit of everything. But that's what he's doing this year. He's doing a little bit of everything. And I wrote about his impact on Arkansas's 3-point shooting. They're 14 of 29 the last 11 games. Teammates are from three on passes directly from him. He opens up other threes for teammates just as a rim roller, just with the pressure that he puts on teams just kind of short rolling or either getting all the way to the restricted area after setting a ball screen. And then he's, I think, knocked down a 3 and 8 of the last 9 games. So his impact is just, it's so well-rounded. And, you know, I think he's got a legit case to land on the All-SEC defensive team too. Before he got scored on twice at the end of the Alabama game, going into that game, I think teams had hit 16 of 63 shots inside the arc against him. Like, that's a really, really good number. And then I feel like those last two buckets Noah Gurley hit on him kind of lit a fire under him going into Missouri, because Missouri shot 5 of 21 against him, and those 21 shots defended were a career high. He just does everything that you want, and that's obviously – you do that over – a long enough period of time, you got a little bit of a track record with that. That's going to get you noticed by lots and lots of people. I remember when me and Bob were in Kansas City, my dad went too, and my dad kind of set up toward the top of a section, and there was an NBA scout there, and at the top of his notebook was Jalen Williams. And so he's been on these people's minds for quite a while, and he's gotten so much better since Arkansas was in Kansas City. He's just been, a real, real joy to cover. And just the growth he's made over the last, you know, 6 or 7 weeks has been incredible. That's why Arkansas is having the success it is right now.
Yeah. I think he's just such a complete player. You know, before I think he was a little hesitant offensively, maybe too unselfish. Early in the year when they were trying to find a point guard, and JD Notte's taking that spot over now, but they were really struggling with their assists. You know, they had more turnovers than assists, and you never want that. And Jalen Williams really became their best facilitator there the early part of the season. He was out there a lot at the top of the key, and you just see he's looking, and you know, making smart decisions. Sometimes maybe he was trying to be a little too fine, threading that needle, kind of like a, you know, a quarterback throwing an interception because he's trying to get it into too tight a window. But, you know, he was really known more for his passing. He's always been a pretty good rebounder. Last year, that was really probably the first thing he did to get a lot of playing time was rebound and defend, draw charges. And now you just see he's so much more comfortable offensively, whether it's taking the ball to the hole, you know, working in the pick and roll, taking threes. He's just I think he's gained a lot of confidence in his offensive game, and that's just, you know, expanded everything else. But I'm sure he's definitely on teams' draft boards now. Whether or not he'd be picked high enough to justify leaving after this season, I don't know. But it's kind of like Gafford. I mean, you know, Mike Anderson brought Gafford along very slowly. I remember him talking about tempering expectations for him, not wanting to put too much pressure on him. And by the end of Gafford's freshman year, I mean, he was talking about being a draft pick. I mean, like a late first round pick. And he came back, which obviously was good for Arkansas, and then he ended up being a second round pick. I honestly think if he'd gone out after his freshman year, he probably would have been a late first round pick. Not a whole lot higher than he went, but I think he went 35th or something to the Bulls. I can't remember exactly, but it was early second round. I think he would have been taking that 25 to 30 range because, you know, people, I think NBA folks thought, yeah, he was good as a sophomore, but he didn't make the jump they wanted him to. So his stock fell slightly, not a lot. And then of course, Bobby was the SEC player of the year, very good offensive player. He's really great 3-point shooter in the NBA. He was a pretty good shooter at Arkansas, but he's become a great shooter in the NBA. And so, with all the things Jalen could do at 6'10", you know, there's no doubt in my mind he'll be a good NBA player. It's just a question of when that happens.
I think you guys hit the nail on the head with Jalen and his progression, and JD also. I think those two are the clear focal points of opposing team scouting reports. And I think what makes a good team is having a great supporting cast. So when those two aren't having great nights or they're in foul trouble, that they can, someone is stepping up to take the pressure off of those two. And that's when I just wanted to bring up Audis Toney and Trey Wade and their efficiency and percentages that they're having. They're having career years shooting the ball. And I don't know if that's a testament to the coaching staff or just the work that they've put in over the course of their career. But Trey Wade is up from 31% to 44% from three this year. He was a 40% field goal per shooter at Wichita State. He's up to 53%, and his free throw percentage is up 22% from last year. And granted, that's not a large sample size, but I think it's significant enough. And Audis Toney as well. He's up 10% from 66% to a 76% free throw shooter as well from his days at Pitt.
Yeah, I think you made it. Bringing up JD is intriguing to me because JD, I think we understand, is the best player on this Arkansas team, or I think he is. He just makes everything go. But at the same time, like, Jalen's probably, he might be your best NBA prospect at this point. Like, Stanley might have a case just because I think his game fits pretty well in the NBA, but I don't really know at this point in time, like, what JD's draft prospects are. And there was a good thread on the board today kind of about that. You know, JD's 6'1 or 6'2, and, you know, he's not like a great shooter, but he's got the capability to hit. I mean, he can get any shot he wants, and he, you know, he's a very instinctive defender. I just think that JD, as good as he is in college, I think if somebody gives him a shot at the pro level, maybe even the NBA, that his game could take another step. Because just think about how compressed everything is defensively inside the arc in the college game. Like, that's kind of what I don't like about the college game, is everything is so compressed and everything's almost geared inside the 3-point line. In the NBA, like, could you imagine JD running pick and roll with the floor as spread as it is in the NBA? Like, he could make a lot of things happen. And I think, you know, if somebody gives JD a shot, maybe in a training camp or something like that, he might be able to stick around for a little bit.
How do you think the college game fixed that, Scotty? Is it as simple as maybe pulling back the 3-point arc, or is it a stylistic thing?
That's interesting. Like, it even goes back to, like, some of the, like, Eric Musselman, I remember talking about this, maybe it was during the COVID shutdown. Eric was doing a radio interview talking about the rules differences in the NBA and college. Like, The NBA plays quarters, college plays halves. Like, if you want to gear guys in college to get ready for them to play at the NBA level, you need to make rules and, you know, like line distances the same. And I think a lot of it might have to do with the 3-point line, because that's where kind of everybody gravitates to, right? I mean, we saw is kind of a silly example, but like when Arkansas played in Tulsa against Oklahoma, there was a NBA 3-point line down on the floor, and that's just where guys gravitated to. And so, like, if you got an NBA 3-point line out on the floor, maybe teams start running their high pick and roll a little bit higher, farther away from the basket, and it just creates driving lanes for guys. And then when a guy like JD gets into the middle of the defense, there's going to be like probably at least two guys open. It's just a lot of space to cover, but that's just kind of my thoughts on it. It might have to do a lot with the 3-point line.
Always thought you can kind of see where the men's game is going to go based on the rule changes that you see with the women. It's been about 5, 6, 7 years now since they went to quarters. I really expect that to make its way to the men's game at some point. Of course, you know, the women went to the 30-second shot clock a lot longer before the men did. That finally made its way into the game. It's it's a slow process to improve the game, but I have faith that it's going to be done. The Basketball Podcast of Mid-America is brought to you by Landers Toyota of Northwest Arkansas. Visit their showroom at 411 South Metro Parkway in Rogers or online at LandersToyotaNWA.com.
For all your automotive needs, shop Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers, where we guarantee you the best buying experience and best service after the sale in Arkansas. Landers Toyota NWA in Rogers.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Arkansas and Tennessee on Saturday, 3 o'clock tip-off. The game's going to be televised by ESPN. One of those rare occurrences where you get a really big game in Bud Walton Arena. And I'd say there haven't been big games there. The Auburn game a couple of weeks ago was a really big one. But up until then, there really hadn't been any big games inside the arena. There have been some SEC games, but teams that weren't ranked, teams that weren't necessarily predicted to do real well. And now over the final few weeks, you've got a lot of big games in Fayetteville. They play Tennessee. They play Kentucky. They play LSU there. This is where you really feel like the arena is going to be rocking like old times. Woody Bassett, the attorney in Fayetteville who writes guest commentary for our site from time to time, he had a good column this morning, said that it's starting to kind of feel like the 1990s inside Bud Walton again.
Yeah, it was funny. I remember when Arkansas played, I think it was the 97 NIT, they had a consolation game back then. Arkansas had lost to Michigan, I think it was, and they were playing UConn in the consolation game in Madison Square Garden about, 4 or 5 p.m. New York time. And Woody was at the game for some reason. I guess he was in New York on business maybe. And he came down and we were talking. And there probably were 300 people in Madison Square Garden. But obviously, Bud Walton Arena is a far different atmosphere these days. And yeah, Eric Musselman was asked about, you know, the schedule coming up. And yeah, they're obviously focused on Tennessee, as they should be. But he talked about this being a great opportunity when you look at how high these teams are in the net. You know, Kentucky's top 5 net. LSU, for all their struggles, is still top 20. And they got Pinson back now, and they won last night. I think they're 17-0. When they have that starting lineup that, you know, Pinson's in, Day's in, and everybody. So they're still very tough out when healthy. And they've got to play. It's weird. You know, they've played A&M twice, played Missouri twice, played Mississippi State twice. They haven't played Tennessee once, but they'll play Tennessee twice in these last 5 games. Those are both be big net games. And then I think I think Florida's about 50th, but that's a road trip. Arkansas had one down in Gainesville since 95. So that'll be a tough game. So, but as Eric Musselman mentioned, you know, these are great opportunities for Arkansas, because even if they lose, now he didn't mention losing, but even if they lose, it won't affect their strength of schedule very much. And if they win, I think they're about 30th in the net now. They've moved up almost 70 spots from that rough start. They were like 98. If they win, like if they beat Tennessee, I think they'll probably move into the top, you know, 20-something in net. And if they beat Kentucky, they'll go to the top dozen. Now, those are big ifs. Those are tough games. But they've got an opportunity here for a really strong finish that could get them, you know, into the top 15 probably in the net.
I think I read, Andrew, that their final five games are against Q1 opponents, or the final five games are Q1 opportunities. You know, it depends on where you play them, obviously. But this is a big opportunity for Arkansas.
Yeah, it is. And I think they've done really well to rebound from that 0-3 conference start that they had. They've rattled off a ton of wins in a row to put them in a spot where I don't necessarily think they have to go 5-0 or 4-1 to feel comfortable about their odds of making the tournament. I think, you know, they can split these games depending on who they beat and who they lose to. They can go 2-3 and still feel comfortable about where they're going to land come March. So, but these are big games. If they do end up winning the majority of them, I think they could see a major boost in their bracket line and maybe move up to that 3 or 4 line.
I mean, you're talking about Arkansas is going into a game this weekend where I think you would say that Arkansas, according to Joe Lenardi's bracketology anyway, I think he updated it a couple of days ago, I guess on Tuesday, you know, he had Arkansas on the 6 line. And as of now, Tennessee is on the 3 line and Kentucky's probably somewhere in that 2-3 line too. So there's big time opportunities there. And, you know, KenPom really, really, really likes LSU. I think LSU's still got the number one adjusted defensive efficiency in the country right now. And, you know, you look at that, I think that Florida road game next week is going to be really big. That's a team that's either in the last four in or first four out in Lenardi's bracketology. So, you know, Florida's had its struggles, ups and downs and what have you throughout the year, but that's going to be a really interesting game. It's a team that I think they may lead the league in, you know, with percentage of attempts that are threes. So Arkansas is going to have to be on its toes there. Defending the 3-point line, and the Colin Castleton, Jalen Williams matchup is always, it's going to be really fun. It was last year in Bud Walton when, you know, him and Justin Smith kind of shut Castleton down. So really, really big opportunities for Arkansas the last 2.5 or 3 weeks. And I think I just can't understate the importance of Arkansas kind of getting its act together over the last few weeks to kind of gear up for this, you know, stretch run.
I think a big matchup for the Tennessee game is going to be how they handle Kennedy Chandler in the backcourt. I'm looking at his game log here, and in all the losses that he's been a part of at Tennessee, he's turned the ball over at least 3 times, including 6 at LSU and 5 against Texas Tech. So I think if they can put pressure on him and make him turn the ball over, it could be a good day for them.
The Ziegler kid is really talented too. Like, that's a guy that Eric talked about on Wednesday that was super, super under-recruited. But, you know, I think in terms of like Tennessee's backcourt, you know, along with Kennedy Chandler, who he's an NBA prospect. I looked at Sam Vecenie's latest mock draft today. He's on there. Those two guys just kind of are the heart and soul of Tennessee's backcourt. And then you've also got 2 other guys in Vescovi and Justin Powell who have, you know, starting experience at the point guard spot. And Tennessee's really physical up front. So Arkansas is probably going to need guys like, you know, Kamani Johnson to bring his usual physical nature to the game. And they need Trey Wade to get on the glass, you know, much more like he did against Missouri and less like he did the previous couple games.
Scotty mentioned a minute ago that Arkansas is going to go to Florida next week. They haven't won in Florida since 1995. Really hard to believe that it's been that long since they've won at the O'Connell Center. This is a really interesting weekend to me, and I touched on this a minute ago, in terms of the standings in the SEC. Tennessee beat Kentucky the other night, and in doing so, they created a 2-way tie for 2nd place in the league, Tennessee and Kentucky, with 3 losses in the SEC. Of course, Auburn is still number 1 in the league. Their only league loss was to Arkansas. But you look at the games this weekend, Tennessee comes to Fayetteville. Alabama is at Kentucky. Really interesting game there. Alabama's been kind of the giant killer this year. They play up, they play down to their competition, and they certainly played up to a lot of really good teams, beating Baylor, beating Gonzaga, beating Houston. I think the Arkansas win at this point is notable. They had a couple of close games, or at least one close game, with Auburn. And then Auburn on Saturday is an early tip-off, kind of a, I don't know, almost feels a little bit like a trap game. They go to Florida. They go to Gainesville. And Auburn hasn't played real well on the road this season. Now, they've won a lot of the games, but you know, they won by 1 point in Columbia. They had the game where they just barely scraped by Georgia in Athens. And you've got a Florida team, Bob, that, you know, Mike White may be coaching for his job here over the final 2 or 3 weeks. And it's a really interesting game, almost like moving weekend, feels like, for SEC in terms of seeding and standings with a couple of weeks left before the tournament.
Yeah, I think Florida is a good team. I think Mike White's a good coach. He seems to be under constant pressure there because he's not Billy Donovan, who, you know, his name, Billy Donovan's name's on the court. He won 2 national titles, been to a couple of their Final Fours now. Yeah, I think, you know, you look at Florida's, their struggles with Castleton, you know, the big transfer from Michigan has been such a good player. He was out. You know, if Arkansas fans remember when Isaiah Joe was out 2 years ago, like Arkansas lost 5 in a row, had some really excruciating losses in there. They could have gone either way, but, you know, Florida had a tough loss at A&M the other night. Finally, A&M finally stopped the bleeding. But I think Florida's a quality program. I think they're a real tough team, especially at home and especially for Arkansas later. But it would not shock me if Florida won that, beat Auburn. You know, Castleton's back now, and they're playing better. Of course, they got, you know, the Appleby kid from Jacksonville, you know, same town as same high school as Devo Davis. But, yes, I still think Florida's a dangerous team. And yeah, they're playing for their NCAA tournament lives, because if you look at a lot of the bracketology, they're one of the first 4 teams out, or the next of the first 4 teams out, whatever the heck those lists are they do. But, you know, beating Auburn would help, and beating Arkansas, for that matter, would really help Florida. So Florida's got a chance with some good teams coming into Gainesville to you know, make up some ground and get into the NCAA tournament, get off the bubble and get into the tournament field.
Real quick before you finish, let's talk about the Tennessee game this weekend. The keys to this game for both teams. Tennessee, you look at their schedule, Scotty, they have not lost to a bad team this year. They lost to Villanova. They lost to Texas Tech. They lost to Alabama, Kentucky, LSU, and they lost a really close game at Texas where they had a great comeback that fell a 1 point short in Austin during the SEC Big 12 Challenge. What do you think the key is for Arkansas on Saturday in order to walk out with another win?
I think they're going to have to play one of their more well-rounded games Arkansas has to win. And Tennessee, like if you look at Tennessee's roster, it's kind of exactly what you want a roster to look like. You've got forwards in the front court who can, you know, they can step out on the perimeter and knock down a shot. Fulkerson can also take you off the bounce, but they've also got like a bruiser / enforcer type guy with Plavchich. I think that's how you say his name. And then they've got like some tweeners like in the 6'6" to 6'8" range that can just, they're really versatile and they're well put together. And that's why I mentioned earlier that, you know, Arkansas might have to have, you know, Kamani Johnson step in and play some pretty impactful minutes, I think, just from a physicality standpoint. And then I think Arkansas is going to have to really, really battle on the glass. I mean, that's kind of a box you got to check in every SEC game, but especially against a team like Tennessee that's, you know, big and physical. And I think Arkansas has got to just value possession. Like, you can't turn the ball over, pick six type live ball turnovers. Is Tennessee's guards are fast, man. Like Andrew mentioned Kennedy Chandler earlier. The Ziegler kid is, I mean, he's a blur, and he's 5'9" and he's really, really tough on both ends. Got really quick hands, quick feet. He can keep guys in front. So maybe that JD Notte matchup is, that might be one to watch if they opt to put a little bit of a smaller, quicker guard on JD. But Tennessee's just really good at turning teams over. So Arkansas is going to have to be really sure handed and, you know, just they got to get a shot on goal every possession and give themselves a chance to go grab misses. And that's where I think, you know, Audis Toney, Arkansas needs him to get his mind right again. And he was so big in that second half against Auburn, just giving Arkansas a presence on the offensive glass and giving them opportunities for second chance points.
the home crowd is going to play a huge part in this game. I think you look at the Auburn game, I think that the fans were easily worth a good 5 to 10 points in that game, and they can really make a difference if the Razorbacks can stay in the game and maybe get out to an early lead like they did against Auburn. That got the crowd hyped up and kept them in it. So I think the first 5 to 10 minutes of that game are going to be crucial for them. And if they can get out to a lead or at least keep it close and keep the fans in it, then I think they should have a good shot.
Yeah, I think the kind of like Andrew's talking about, if they could force some turnovers, get transition points, that'd be big, because Tennessee scoring on their said defense is going to be very tough. But I think Arkansas has to show some patience too. You know, they want to hit some threes, but don't jack up a bunch of threes. Their recipe for winning has been driving the ball, you know, getting fouls, hitting free throws. So I think they're going to need to get some transition points, but also, you know, show some good patience, you know, in their half-court offense.
Arkansas and Tennessee Saturday at 3 o'clock at Bud Walton Arena. ESPN will televise. Go to wholehogsports.com before, during, and after the game. Plenty of coverage from the big game on Saturday. Also, lots of coverage this weekend as the Razorbacks get ready to start their baseball season. Subscribe to our podcast channel. You can check out the Whole Hog Baseball podcast this week. Bubba Carpenter, the Razorback baseball color analyst, joins me, as does Joe Healy of Baseball America. You can find the podcast by searching Whole Hog Radio. That's three words, WHOLEHOGRADIO, in most podcast stores. We'll be back with another basketball podcast of Mid-America next week to look back at the Tennessee and Florida games and to look ahead to another big weekend game with Kentucky at Bud Walton Arena. For Bob Holt, Scotty Bordelon, and Andrew Joseph, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.